recordings are started.
Okay. Welcome back, everyone. Operator, can I ask you to begin the recording, please? And then, as soon as that's confirmed, we'll start the new GTLD session. Thank you.
Recordings have started.
Thank you very much. Welcome all to this new GTLD program discussion between the GNSO Council, and we have several members of ICANN staff here. To my right, we have Kurt Pritz, who is, I believe, now the interim new GTLD program director. Akram Ayatollah is here, the ICANN COO. We have John Jeffries, the general counsel, Karen Lentz, and others. We have coming up on your screen in just a minute a list of topics that we are looking to address in this one-hour session, a pretty short session, so we'll try and get through everything. And in order not to waste any time, I will hand the mic over to, well, I won't actually because he's just got up and left, but so I'll talk a bit more and then hand over the mic to Kurt to lead us into this. Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, Stefan. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Prague. I'm pleased to see everyone here. I'm pleased to be here, too. The list of topics you see before you is the topics we received from the council for discussion at this meeting. So I hope you find the material responsive and addresses the issues that you sought to be addressed, and we're happy to take questions on each. So there's five issues and we have an hour. So if we talk for 6 minutes on each one, we can take 6 minutes of questions or 4 minutes. But we know, in this format, really it's more about the questions, and of course you guys are, everyone here is pretty much up to speed on these issues. So we'll provide some background in the slides and then take questions. And Stefan said, I'm really pleased to be joined by John, Akram, Karen, and Xavier, who are equally knowledgeable and have been doing, anyway, good stuff about them. So let's talk about URS first. It's probably the toughest one. I think before I start, I think ICANN's made, ICANN, meaning the big ICANN here, has made tremendous progress on all of these implementation issues. And if you think about the list of partners we've developed to work with on this program, it's a pretty remarkable list. And I think it speaks to the gravitas ICANN's earned through the participation of the people in this room on this program, and the importance that your participation has given ICANN, and also that the new GTLD program being of such interest has elevated ICANN somewhat. So when you go down these lists, you're going to see participants such as, our evaluators are KPMG and Ernst & Young and PricewaterhouseCoopers. They're the University College of London, The Economist, the intelligence arm of The Economist, InterConnect, InterAisle. When you think about the dispute resolution providers, they're the ICC in Paris, WIPO, which is a UN treaty organization, you know, the ICDR, our independent objector, Dr. Alain Pillay, is a man of great esteem. And I'm leaving some out, but as you go down that list, I think at each step, the clearinghouse providers, Deloitte and IBM, you know, it's a respectable group, and that's because all the work here people put into fashioning this process and making it a well thought out process has attracted the attention of significant firms who are anxious to participate in what's, you know, I don't say historical because we say it in every website announcement we make, but it is very significant, and we've attracted the attention of these remarkable and noteworthy firms. So I wanted to say that because in URS, this is one problematic area where we have to work together to solve an issue, and that is the URS was developed with a few goals in mind, being a cheaper and quicker complement to UDRP for clear-cut cases of abuse, a rapid takedown system, and the background behind it. And so, ICANN's done implementation work on all the fronts of all these new rights protection mechanisms. On this one, the very clear feedback we're getting is that as currently configured, the URS isn't going to meet its cost target, which is a very important component of it. So can we refashion or adjust the URS in some way to meet or come closer to our cost targets and meet the goals set out by the IRT when they set out to build this thing, and still maintain the safeguards for registrants that are built into the current process? The current process is relatively bureaucratic, that added some cost. So how can we reduce the cost of the current process and keep the safeguards? So that's clearly not a discussion for ICANN staff only in its lofty new offices in Los Angeles, but rather it's a community discussion. And so what we wanted to try to kick it off earlier, but could not coordinate it. But kick off here how to have that community discussion to look at how URS is built and see if we can refashion it to get to the cost targets. Is that the last slide on this? Is there more to it? Is the only slide? No, there's more. So what's the anyway? So I've already spoke to the URS goals: registrant protection, low cost, fast for clear cases, and complement the UDRP. Is there another slide? So the next slide is when we create this community discussion, you know, what are the cost drivers for URS, and can they be reduced without sacrificing the goals of the program and maintain the safeguards? So the big question is really the last one. What's the proper process to help develop this revamped URS process? That's the end. I'll pay better attention to the slides. So with that, if anybody has any comments or questions on URS, I'd be happy to take them. We're going to have a session on this later on in the week to specifically attack the issue of how to start the public discussion and then how to carry it forward.
Thanks. So I have Jeff and Alan and Thomas. Jeff.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Jeff Newman. I guess it might help either during the session that happens this week or if you can go into it now. In order to determine that it wasn't going to meet the cost goals that you had, you had obviously some feedback from the providers. Is there something you could share with us? What did they say was driving their costs up? Was it the fact that, for example, I've heard some feedback that if you had a default automatically meant finding for the, you wouldn't have to do the analysis if there was a default. That might drive the cost down. I mean, what is the feedback you've had from them that led you to the conclusion that they can't do it for that price?
So we heard, we had a meeting with WIPO. You know, we were shopping the RFP or the request for proposals around. We met with WIPO, who identified for us that they thought the cost was up in the range of UDRP, and We met with another specific entity that's not coming to mind that identified the same thing. So this is right into the details. So one of the issues identified was, does there always have to be a determination on the merits, in the case of a default? And even the IRT said, because that's a cost adder, and even the IRT said, yes, so, in order to protect registrants, but at the end of the day, that's a big cost adder. So is there a way in some cases to not have a decision on the merits, to have a default, but still build in some protections around it somehow? Other parts of it were, administration for appeals, administration for loser pays. They're all cost adders to that. So do we want to keep that? What's the cost benefit of each of those things? So clearly, policy type issues.
Thank you. I have Alan next, and then Thomas.
Two comments. In the list that I saw published of the things that drive the costs up, one of them that caught my eye was the requirement for a de novo appeal process. Now, when we created that, we did add that capability in, but I think those in the room thought it was going to be used very, very rarely. And therefore, the statistics of how often people are presuming that that kind of thing would be done is going to significantly impact the cost. So getting information on either what statistics they put into it or what I can put into it in the calls would certainly help us work on that. The second point is I was one of the ones who participated in the group that created the current URS. I cannot remember a more remarkable group where people came into it with such diverse opinions and ended up compromising, and virtually everyone compromised, and most people came out of it moderately happy that it would satisfy their needs. And I would like to hope that whatever process you do come out of with this does not break the compromise that was made and find in favor of only one of the groups or the other. The board already unilaterally made one change to the URS many months ago, which broke that compromise, and I hope that in this new process it doesn't happen again. Thank you.
And this discussion here really should be about how do we put that team together and getting into the details of, how much cost does an appeals mechanism add to the whole thing. That's what we want to get into with the experts we choose to put on this group. But that's it. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks, Stefan. It was with great surprise and also concern that I read that the URS had to be reshaped in the budget proposal. I think that parts of the community have bought into the new GTLD program because they relied on a URS being in place. And that would both be a URS having the features, as described in the AGB, as well as the costs involved with that. So I think, just a word of caution, I think that it would be too rushed to amend either of one of these factors at this stage. And I'd like to echo what Jeff said. I think what we need to understand is what the cost breakdown of the proposals is. I think that if you look at the URS and the different response times with different procedural aspects going along with it, that might look frightening to somebody who wants to make an offer or put in a bid. So I think that if you compare it to UDRP, where we know that there is a huge portion of the cases ending with the default judgment, it might be worthwhile considering detailing further what is required from the URS provider. And then maybe it might look less frightening to those who want to put in a bid. And also to maybe have different cost portions, let's say, so that there would be an initial fee. And if the case can end with a default, that would be it. And if it gets more complex, that maybe only then additional fees are incurred with the process.
So I don't have to comment on everything, but I have a propensity to. So those are all all good comments and exactly the right way to go about analyzing these things. I too am aware of a heavy obligation to implement URS in time, because this is one of the important rights protection mechanisms. And I am telling you that, in our opinion, the bids we get back will be over our cost targets. So while I would normally do exactly like you said, because that's the right way to go down that analysis, I want to bring it to everyone's attention right now so we can start working, because I think my opinion is it is in fact the way it's configured will result in not hitting our cost targets, and we should take a community make a community effort on this. And I think in parallel, as we get this fired up, we're going to do those things you can say, so we can inform the, we need to inform the discussion, and we need to inform it with the things you're saying.
Thank you. So let's, Zaid, you have a small point, then we'll try and get to the next topic to keep on our schedule. Thanks.
Thank you. I just look at the URS procedure, and I notice that it looks very similar in format to that of the nominate dispute resolution policy. And I just want to sort of keep in mind that the reason why the nominate dispute resolution policy does force default cases to expert decision in any case is because it's not a rapid suspension, and it's a full dispute resolution. And maybe using that logic or that distinction, really, we could say, well, in the URS, we don't have to have a full-fledged expert decision. Just something maybe that helps with the discussion you're having currently. Thanks.
Next topic is trademark clearinghouse, I think. Yeah, I'm going to let Karen talk to this, since she's the manager of this project. And I'll go ahead, Karen.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. to update you on where we are with the trademark clearinghouse since we last met a few months ago in March, a couple of things that have been achieved. One, in terms of the provider procurement for the services, we've engaged a provider team that encompasses Deloitte, IBM, and CHIP. Deloitte in the role of trademark validation, and IBM in the role of database management and supporting the trademark claims and Sunrise services that will be offered by registries. This isn't new, but we collected community input through the Implementation Assistance Group on some of the key issues from November through about May. And then use that to inform the draft implementation model in April, which is the most comprehensive look at what the implementation will look like. There's also a new page on the website linked at the bottom there that compiles all the current info on the clearinghouse. This slide is what's called key design principles. And these are just some of the themes that we got out of the community comment that were used to inform how we built the model. One is to limit the data exposure. There's a concern about having a lot of aggregated data flowing around to many different parties and the risks there. There was a desire to avoid a single point of failure in the domain name registration process, so not putting the clearinghouse in a step or in a position where it could have an impact on other critical processes in name registration and management. There's also minimize the number of parties that interact for the rights protection mechanism. So there's an intention to keep the process as simple as possible, where all of the entities that are using or interacting with the clearinghouse know that there's a logical other party for them to interact with. Along with that, we kind of called closeness, which is that people would interact with those parties that are closest in the chain. So If I'm a rights holder, I would primarily expect to interact with the clearinghouse when it came to the submission of trademark data and use management of that. domain name registrant is going to interact with the registrar, have their questions answered there. The registry and the registrar would interact with each other. So trying to maintain existing types of relationships as much as possible. And then finally, one of the principles is that, the model that we come up with should be compatible with what's already been developed in terms of the clearinghouse that as reflected in the applicant guidebook. I think there's one more slide. Thanks. And this is just looking ahead. We're currently involved in refining the technical requirements with the providers. We have gotten quite a bit of feedback on the draft implementation model that was published. And so we've considered that and are, working through what adaptations should be made. And then we're also have a track where we're developing EPP extensions to support the new communications, the transmissions of data that will be needed between registries and registrars to support claims and Sunrise data. We're also, in terms of supporting potential registry operators who will be operating new GTLDs and who will be required to offer these services. We're working on developing an interface spec for those communications and starting to put together a mailing list so that the technical parties at registries who will be in the sort of engineering end of preparing the registry for this can be involved in those discussions. The project plan does provide for testing in stages. The first stage, I believe, which is sort of chronologically with the process, the first stage to be testing the actual submission of trademark data and how that what that interface looks like and how it works. So that's scheduled to start in July. The ultimate completion date for the project plan is still targeting October 2012, with the intention that there would be an opportunity for rights holders to submit data in the clearinghouse and have that in there before any new GTLDs are going live and accepting new registrations. So I think that's the end of this topic, with slides.
Thanks, Karen. I first of all have a remote question from Marika, then I'll go to Jeff, Jonathan. Marika?
It is Marika. I have a question from Ruben School. His question is, why such a high and unexpected cost of a trademark clearinghouse to the registry from $7,000 to $10,000?
So, I can't give a very detailed answer. The cost estimates were mostly derived by the provider. I think that the work that's done by the clearinghouse in terms of setting up a registry, a lot of it in the current model happens at the beginning. So there's a high degree of setup and testing, and that most of it comes from there.
Yeah, and this is Kurt. I also wonder if $7,000 to $10,000 is high. $185,000 for an application fee, multiples of that for setting up registry operations, and so I think $7,000 to $10,000 to have your Sunrise and IP claims thing dealt with isn't high.
So I have Jeff next.
Yeah, I'm. So, if you were to ask some of the registries what the largest obstacle is to implementing new GTLDs after the application process, I think this is it. We've had a number of communications on this. It's amazing to see this slide for the first time, because when the implementation group was initially created, there was a month built into that timeline to actually talk to the providers. So just so everyone knows, there's never been a discussion between the registries, registrars, and the providers at all. In fact, until last month, none of us knew who it was. The fact that you're talking about developing EPP extensions without ever talking to a registry or a registrar is actually fundamentally amazing to me. How could you do that? How could IBM, who's never been a registry, Deloitte, who's never been a registry, and CHIP, who's never been a registry, how could they do that? To me, that's just fundamentally amazing. We've never seen anything about your agreement with the provider, so we have no idea what your model is or where the $7,000 to $10,000 came in. I happen to know for a fact that other bidders for that suggested a lot less than $7,000 to $10,000 per registry. The implementation model that came out was extremely complex and had a one-size-fits-all mentality. ARI, AUS Registry International, I'm assuming that's what it stands for, ARI, submitted a paper, which Neustar signed on to and helped as well, on the technical implementation, which provides in very detailed form our issues from a technical perspective, from a registry perspective, on the implementation. Several months ago, we asked for a technical summit to take place between the registries, the registrars, and the providers to go through the details way before this even came out, and we have not heard back from ICANN on it. We still believe, and we're still renewing our request in July for a technical summit with the actual providers and the engineers from the registries and the registrars to get together. A mailing list is not going to cut it. It's great, and it's a good step forward, but it's not going to be the way that progress is made on this. And to me, that last sentence of code releases scheduled in July, I don't even know what to say to that. That's code on what? You know, the implementation model, it's, again, I'm a little speechless because this is the first time we've seen it, but we really need to have that technical summit, really need to get with the providers, the engineers together, and before any EPP extensions are developed, to actually get the registries involved. Thanks.
So I think I wrote down all of the points here. In terms of the EPP extensions, this is something that I don't know if Francisco can supplement, but it's not actually being done by the provider. It's we've hired somebody who has experience in developing in the EPP area and has experience with that.
Hi, this is. Can people hear me? Okay. So this is Francisco, on the technical side of ICANN. On the EPP extensions, as Karen mentioned, we are contracted an expert on this side to help us, and he's currently working on that, and we plan to release that to the ITF mailing list that deals with the EPP protocol. That should be out pretty soon. So we, just to be clear, this will be a proposal that for which we will expect input from registries and registrars. It's not like we are saying this is the way to do it. This will be a proposal because we want to have something to start the discussion. Thank you.
Thanks. Let me just say two things. First of all, for those of you in the room that aren't GNSO counselors, if you want to speak, there are two mics at the end that you can stand up and use. Just stand up there and I will see you, and just introduce yourselves when you want to speak. Adrian wants to just get back on the point that Francisco just made, and then we'll carry on with the queue, and Jonathan will be next. Adrian.
Thanks, Stefan. Is this on? Can you hear me? Yeah. Adrian Kinders from AUS Registry / AUS Registry International / ARI Registry Services. Thanks, Jeff. Just a quick comment on that. I'm not sure why ICANN has hired an expert when they have all the registries at their disposal and the community at their disposal that would, I'm sure, dedicate their time and resources for free. So that was just a little staggering to me. Thanks.
Thank you. Jonathan, Mason, and anyone in the room, stand up. I see Ken there, Marilyn, so just come to you after the two councillors. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. Jonathan Robinson. I think there's a couple of points I'd make, one point and one question. The point is really, I guess, to support much of the concerns from a registry's point of view that Jeff has raised about the mechanisms by which you are communicating these developments, the operational and other concerns, technical issues. We need to interact with you, not have substantial delays where we hear nothing and then have sudden communications where there's a whole lot of catch-up and we may well have been more effective if we'd talked to you in the interim. One of the other issues is the cost issue, and Kurt, to your response of whether $7,000 to $10,000 is a substantial amount or not, I don't think that's the issue. I think the overarching objective of the Trademark Clearinghouse was to provide a cost-effective and technically sensible solution to an industry-wide problem. Of course, in contracting with a single provider, you're creating a de facto monopoly service. So I think what we need to know and understand as a community is we need to understand the basis on which the costs are reached, and to understand and believe and buy into the fact that you are creating the most cost-effective mechanism that we can rely on. So I think we need a lot more understanding of how these costs are reached, how they're derived, and to develop confidence that you have reached the optimal, frankly, the lowest cost solution to service both the community's interests and the rights owners themselves. Because ultimately, if the bills go into the ecosystem, they're going to feed back somewhere, and those are either going to be onto consumers or rights owners or both.
Thanks, Jonathan. The cost estimates were published because we got fairly strong comments in the Costa Rica meeting that the community wanted to see some cost estimates, so they don't know. So we urged our partners to develop some ahead of all the detailed calculations that would be necessary to provide a final number and the detail behind it to back it up. We understand that, in a sense, this is there's one provider, especially for the database, because we think there can, you know, so far we think there can only be one database. In the future, there might be multiple providers of validation services, so we think there could be competition for those. Remember, this is opening day, and this is going to evolve where we hope to involve additional providers, especially as far as validators. And I don't think we should sign up with a low-cost provider. I think we should sign up with an entity that we feel very good about providing reliable, consistent service in the long term. We had many applicants that could do both, we think, but we want it to be economical. We want it to be cost-effective, but mostly we want it to work good and last a long time.
Thank you. I'm happy to let this discussion continue, but we will have to end this session at 12, so that means not getting to some of the other topics. I can see there's passion here, so we need to let this continue. But just want to make that housekeeping point clear. Mason, you're next.
Thank you, Stefan. I agree with the points being made in the room already, so my question is one of process, which is what happens now. How do you engage registrars and registries on system design and implementation? And what is the process for public comment on the cost?
So I think that to pick up on something that Jonathan just said, that the communications on this have been less than they should have been, and it's really mostly because it's a difficult project. The issues are complex, and it took a lot of work and feedback to develop the draft model. And then we did receive actually quite a bit of significant comment on it. So it's required going through all of that. Through those points, looking back at what we have and the reasons we had it, and considering the impact of some of the feedback that was suggested. So, in terms of the process forward, there's a couple of things. One is the kind of methodology that we've discussed with our provider partners is that manuals or procedures or you know, fleshed out implementation pieces, for example, you know, the detailed rules around, you know, which trademarks are eligible, which are sort of stated at a high level in the guidebook. You know, as things are developed, that they would be published on that ICANN page for comment, and that there would be opportunity for that. In terms of supporting the actual registry and registrar implementation work, you know, you've heard a few ideas circulated here. And that was, you know, feedback we heard in the last couple of interactions, that this is a strong concern, given the time frame and the work that is needed on that end to implement that. So, you know, in response to that, we did go back to our provider and you know, highlight this as something that they, wanted them to support as well. And that's why the, you know, development of the interface and spec has kind of been moved up with the, you know, supported by that mailing list that that would involve the relevant people from the registrars and registries who will, you know, be deep into those details to be involved in that.
Thanks.
Stefan, I'm sorry. I don't think I heard anything about public comment on the cost.
So, I think it's, you know, certainly that, you know, we've heard comment here. I don't think it was anticipated that there would be, you know, a formal public comment period, for example. But, you know, the program is always open for feedback, and we've taken what we've heard already. So.
Right, and that was an estimate by the parties, and I think we want to, I don't know, we're going to drive to more specific costs as we do the implementation.
Okay, so we've got 20 minutes left, 19. I'm going to ask for you all to make your comments as briefly as possible. We won't go back to ICANN staff for responses until the end of your comments. I have four people in the queue. We'll cut it off behind Anthony. So, Ken, take it away.
Yeah, I'm going to make this comment to Akram, if I could, please. As you can see, we have a serious communication problem, number one. Number two, we don't have anything to benchmark against. Number three, the community is still in the dark about this overall plan. I have trouble understanding why you can't take something like this and put it into a PERT chart, providing us with timelines, and give the community the opportunity to see where we're going, when we can expect to get there, and if we see any deficiencies like concerns about public comment sections, we need to see these plans up front. You're hitting us too often, too late, with too much or too little. Thank you.
Thank you. Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm going to open my comments by returning to a practice that we used to use, and maybe it would be a good one to return to. I have no conflicts of interest because I'm not supporting an applicant. But so my comments, however, are going to be about the implications of the Trademark Clearinghouse on the users. I do chair the business constituency, and what I've heard us do today a couple of times is interchangeably maybe use the term industry. What is the effect of the Trademark Clearinghouse on industry? And then what is the effect of the Trademark Clearinghouse on the community? And I think, actually, to return to something that my constituency felt strongly about is the Trademark Clearinghouse is here to serve the those who hold trademarks and are going to be users of the Trademark Clearinghouse, as well as serve the registries who are entering as new applicants. So I'd like to, first of all, make sure that when we're talking about the Trademark Clearinghouse, we also are going to address the usability of the Trademark Clearinghouse services for the trademark holders or their agents, because some trademark holders choose to use agents, law firms or others, to represent their interest. And that's a priority to us all, I think, in order to make sure that we're not just delivering a product called a trademark clearinghouse, but we're making sure it's going to solve the problems that we wanted to design it for. I do think it's a community-wide problem, because I know from the comments that were filed on the trademark clearinghouse that those who are concerned about the interpretations of whether trademarks should be recognized or not also have concerns about the usability. So if we're going to be able to do further public comments, I think there's more for us to communicate than just than only the cost to the registries and using it. Thanks.
Thank you. Elaine, please keep it brief.
Elaine Perros from Minds and Machines. Just two comments. The first one is I would like clarity that the $7,000 is per registry operator and not per TLD. I guess that's a question.
Just continue. And
okay. And the second one is, once this is to the point where you're testing it, I would ask that we're all allowed to test it to help you.
Thank you. Anthony?
Anthony Vancouvering, Minds and Machines. Very briefly, Kurt, I would like to challenge the assumption that you need to go with IBM-type companies every time. We haven't seen that be particularly successful, but we do know that it is expensive. So I would like to encourage you and understand why you don't go with perhaps people who can offer a much better price and perhaps the same service. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kurt, do you want to provide any answers? Or?
Well, Elaine, I just want to talk to you offline. My impression is it's a TLD price, but I have assumptions about how TLDs will be launched at different times, and so if there's a way that the thing can be bundled in some way, then there could be a separate way to manage that. But just conceptually, every TLD is a new registry, and right. I understand that.
Thank you very much. So let's move on to, I've asked Kurt to change the way he will be, the order of presentation of the topics, just to make sure we get to the timeline topic, which is one that I'm sure everyone feels is crucial. So we'll do the timeline topic now, which was the fifth one on the list, and if we have time, we'll get to the others. Thank you, Kurt.
So the agenda item is a little bit vague, so I don't know if this will meet your needs or not. Initial evaluation of applications will start on July 12th. The way the batching has been conceived, and there's public discussion coming up about that, that each batch of 500 or more would take 4.5 to 5 months each. We've already had discussions about making the batches somewhat larger so that we could accommodate all the applications in 3 batches, but that hasn't been assured. But there's a lot of contention, so we don't think that would affect the delegation rate limits. So our early projection is that all the applications would be done in 15 months. There's some that have written papers that say it could be done sooner. That's possible. But our original projections and what's in the guidebook for 1,900 applications say longer. So we have this early projection in here for this. Assumptions are that batches just go through evaluation, butt it up end-to-end, so there's no time period between any of them. In fact, if you think about batching, it's really about output and not input. There's a continuous feed of applications into evaluators that's done in a way to take advantages of economies of scale, similarities in applications, and which evaluators are most efficient and economical. So batching really goes to how things are reported, not fed into the process. The objection period is in the guidebook is specified to be 7 months for all applications, so we think that we should retain that. even though there might be multiple batches. We think 7 months is long enough for entities to consider objecting, and we think that if an entity decides to make an objection and then pockets it for months or years, if the objection period were extended, that wouldn't be fair to applicants. That you can comment throughout the whole process. The guidebook says that if you comment in the first 60 days, the evaluator will be sure to see it. The next slide. So the agenda item was timeline and readiness. I wanted to talk a bit about that. Provisional evaluations are occurring right now, so we give the panels applications to evaluate. We give both like two panels the same set of applications, and they come back and report scoring. There's a high correlation in scoring, so there are a lot of repeatability and consistency already in scoring. The same issues are raised by multiple panels, so that's those provisional evaluations tell us, one, that scoring is consistent, and two, that it's going to happen efficiently. And so that's what that cross-firm reviews bullet is. We were using this time to continue to do provisional evaluations. So two rounds are done. We've started a third round right now. We sit down and meet with the evaluators and review the results of the applications and identify any differences in the scoring or the questions. Panels are fully staffed. So, for example, I know Ernst & Young has 100 panelists on board and trained and evaluating applications, and numbers are proportional but similar across the board. All the panels have been retained. So, Marika... the evaluation firms, this has already been published, but when we say these have been staffed, I just wanted to say, so each of these firms have staffed their panels. And of course we have multiple panels to address conflicts and volume, and you should know that, for example, with financial and technical panels, for example, the panels that, you know, given quality as the key requirement, the firm that does the applications the most economically will get more evaluations to do in subsequent, I would call them batches going in. So we continue to strive for increased economic cheapness. Objection and dispute resolution. So we have lightweight agreements with the ICC, WIPO, and ICDR to provide dispute resolution services, and they've published their processes and are ready to go. We've retained an independent objector. He's in his office under contract with an assistant and ready to go, and we retained an auction provider. So that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you very much. Can I open it up to questions, please? Adrian?
Thank you, Adrian Kinderis again. Thanks, Kurt. That's helpful. As you well know, my company has been fairly vocal in trying to support ICANN in putting forward alternatives and at least addressing the issue of timelines to try and get some information out there. I should say also that even so far this week, we've had some really good discussions around those timelines that we posted, and we don't purport them to be 100% accurate, but what we do want to do is provide discussion around them. So more information to help us put together a timeline would be better. There's a couple of places that our timeline falls down just because we don't have the information. So I would welcome some comment from ICANN staff onto the accuracy of our timeline or where you think it falls down, and I also would welcome community input as to our timeline, as to whether we should go with batching or potentially look at a single batch. There is some good arguments either way there. More specifically, can you just, on July 11, you're publishing the contention sets, is that correct? So, and your confidence is high that the string similarity is, well, maybe I should ask a question. Is the string similarity supposed to be done at that time, by that time, in order to determine the contention sets?
Oh, finish your whole comment because I have a bunch of things to say.
Okay, then I'm done.
Next. So
I'd like to be put in the queue again.
I thought your paper was really good. Where the logic falls down a little bit for us is that we don't see economies, we don't see applications being processed any faster whether we do them in a single batch or three batches. We're feeding applications in, and the batching is really is how we report out. So if you think of a game of Tetris, do you play Tetris? Yeah. Well, you should work.
That's all I
can. So if you think about a really slow game of Tetris, we'll be filling in applications into the process where they're most economically done, and whether we report results in one batch or three batches really wouldn't speed up that process. We think, you know, what we've reported was that we can do a batch in 4.5 to 5 months. Your paper, I think, challenges us to do them in one batch and get it done in a year. We aspire to that, and we will, but not commit to that. We will look for economies along the way. We have overstaffed the capability in order to provide the redundancy to address conflicts, and so we'll continue to look for that. So most of all, we want to make sure they're done fairly and consistently. We're for getting them done as fast as possible because we realize what's at stake. And then I should answer your last question because I forgot what it was about.
String similarity.
Yeah. So the string similarity will just be identical strings, and then that will be augmented at a later date, and I don't know what that is with the similar strings, which we think will be a small augmentation to the batches.
Thank you. I have Mason next.
Thank you, Stefan. I'm glad to hear you talk about these efficiencies. I know that registrars and registries are ready for those to be applied as the process continues, so I wanted to ask a question again on the budget. There's a lot of padding in the GTLD budget. What's going to happen with excess application fees and when? And I don't mean community input on the current amount that's already in the bank, as opposed to the excess that comes from the auction that is subject to community input. The question is, what is the current thinking about returning excess application fees to applicants?
I'll take that. Xavier Calavez, CFO of ICANN. The current thinking is to deal globally with excess, irrespective of what solutions there are to defining what that excess is. So the potential reimbursement of a portion of the fee is one of the elements that will be included as the possibilities of dealing with the excess, and as part of the overall process to define that use of excesses. So, I don't believe that the reimbursement is a separate element of dealing with the excess. It's dealing with the excess as a whole. I think there is a very strong common understanding and will to define the process for that set of decisions to be made in the reasonably short term, from the board, from the community input that we've received from different parties, not only here, of course, as well from the staff. And what we need to be able to do in the fairly short term is start the definition of that process, lay out the various possibilities that are there, and for staff basically to develop a plan to deal with it. That's what we've understood is needed quickly, and I think the board is also sharing the same type of ideas, so we need to be able to start working on this. The timeline for this is, to be honest, I think that the excess is something that we have only a very theoretical understanding of today in terms of what the amount is. There's a lot of factors, of course, that will influence what the excess is. We've mentioned auctions, we've mentioned a lot of things, and it's clearly something that we're not even at the beginning of understanding what the amount will ultimately be. And the timeline associated with understanding what the excess is also something relatively difficult. So I think that we have planned to initiate the process of definition of how to deal with the excess. It will include a certain number of discussions with the community, with the board, what we are dealing right now is primarily from a cash standpoint, ensuring that we have the full readiness, which we're comfortable with at this stage, to deal with starting the evaluation process, handling the funds, managing the funds, and the dealing with the excess is a longer term subject that we need to be able to initiate the process for discussion of, and that's what we're going to do in the next few weeks.
Thanks. We're out of time, so I'm going to ask for extreme brevity, give councillors priority, and I have Thomas and Jeff. I will not ask ICANN staff to answer any questions raised. If we can, we'll get to the people standing, but we need to end this session extremely quickly because we have a session with the board afterwards, and we need to prepare for that, so I'll have to be quite strict on the time management. I apologize for that in advance. Thomas, be quick.
Thanks, Stefan. There was discussion about excess already at the Reveal Day press conference, and it strikes me quite odd that we're talking about excess now. I think the applicants have the expectation that the job is being done for the money that they spend. And in that regard, I think that ICANN should consider at least to acquire more resources to process the applications quicker and maybe make it possible to evaluate it all in one batch in a shorter period of time. But in that connection, can you maybe share information with us whether you have granted exclusivity to the providers that you're working with? Because if that were the case, then such expansion of resources might be limited for legal reasons.
Jeff.
This is Kurt. But gosh, this is all about quality and getting it right. And we have expended a tremendous amount of resources training the evaluators that we have on hand and ensuring that we have a number of evaluators that are within our span of control to make sure that we get the evaluations right. And it's something we talked about right from the very start. So we're either blessed or cursed with 1,930 applications. We think it's a hallmark of the success of the program. It's a problem and a benefit. But we just can't depart from the quality strategy we decided to adopt at the beginning. And at this stage of the game, engage with more firms or hire more evaluators. We push our evaluators very hard, and we are very pleased with the fact that they are doing better than we thought, both from a consistency consistency standpoint and a efficiency standpoint. But we're going to adhere to our game plan for ensuring consistency and quality of the evaluations.
Thank you. Jeff, and then what I'm going to ask you to do, Ken, Anthony, you've already spoken. I'd like to get to Brett and Chuck, who haven't yet, and then close it off there. I'm sorry, but we have to be strict with time management. Jeff, you're next.
Yeah, I'll try to be real quick. I guess the two points I have, one is that the July 12th on the timeline, now that digital archery has been suspended, is probably not, I'm not sure what the significance of that date actually is now, and you've said that applications have already gone to be initially evaluated. So that's a little bit of a confusing timeline slide, and maybe tomorrow when you give the overall presentation, you might just think about how that data actually plays in now. The second point was is eluding me at the moment.
That's okay. We'll go to Chuck.
The next one.
Thanks. I'll try and be brief. A question and a comment. My question is this. If I understood correctly, the estimates for registry implementation of costs for the Trademark Clearinghouse are about $7,000 per TLD, and that apparently no consideration of efficiencies was factored into that. I find that amazing. Is that really true?
So again, I think Elaine raised a very good point. In Costa Rica, we were asked to put up some cost estimates, and so the costing and therefore the pricing is not complete yet. I think there is an opportunity to bundle pricing somehow that the provider will need to figure out. So one of the providers is IBM, and they're in the business of figuring out how to price things. So I think initially, no, we weren't thinking of that. We were asking them to make some rough order of magnitude estimates for how much it would cost. Should we go back to them when we refine the pricing and say we should figure out how to bundle the provision of the services because there's going to be similarity across many co-owned registries? Yeah, of course we should do that, but we didn't do it at this stage because we're trying to get some rough order magnitude estimates together. We couldn't sit in a room with a provider and make scenario, devise scenarios that we knew to be uncertain, but we can work with real registries as they go through the evaluation process and their real models now that the applications have been revealed, and do some concrete work that pays off. So we'll do that, but I don't see how we could have done that earlier.
Well, I probably disagree with you on that, because we knew all along that there were a limited number of providers and there would be multiple applications, but that's okay. My last comment is, okay, it's not us, whether it be registries or users, trademark holders, against ICANN staff and the implementation of this. Let's work these problems out together, but let's not just, say we heard people suggest let's work together. Let's do it, and very quickly, we need to provide plans for how we're going to work together to solve these problems. It's not an us against you. It's us together to make this thing work effectively.
Thanks, Chuck. And we never think that, too. And the whole idea of the implementation assistance group, which was a large team that worked together for a long time to put together a lot of the thoughts that are in the current model, were a joint community effort. So we would always think we'd work together on this.
Thanks. Let's give Brett the closing words.
Brett Fawcett from UniRegistry. I appreciate, Kurt, your comments that batching was an output mechanism and not an input mechanism. It sounds like ICANN is committed to the batching process, and I'm not going to try to talk you out of that. The question, though, was the timeline talked about starting the evaluation of batch 1 on July 12th. I appreciate that your slide was probably prepared before the announcement yesterday that Archery had been suspended. I wonder what is going to happen to that timeline and how the batching is going to occur given the current uncertainty.
So regardless of batching strategy, evaluations will start full bore on July 12th, and I hear Jeff's comments, so we'll refine the information. But this ramp up to July 12th has always been part of the plan, where we're, doing real evaluations and calibrating the teams. And so, as we have a discussion about batching and how it could be done, or if it should be done, we want to ensure that evaluations are taking place as scheduled. The longer we wait to make decisions about batching, the more inefficient we might get in which applications we do first. That could, after a period of time, push out timelines. So I think that we want to have a community discussion about batching and make decisions, which I don't think will be hard to make, as quickly as possible so we don't incur efficiencies. But we're not stopping the process in any way or the evaluations in any way.
Thank you very much. So we're over time. We have to stop there, which is a pity because it's a great discussion. But councillors, as I explained earlier on, please make sure you are back in this room by, I would suggest, at the very latest, 12:55. We have to be ready to meet with the board at 1 o'clock on the dot. Thank you very much. Operator, this session is now over.